I'm a fan. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 187.
Hi, I'm Bex, also known as Potato Lady Podcast Reviews. Every weekday, I tweet out reviews of indie podcasts. My goal is to unite listeners with their next favorite show, like the one you're listening to now. I also have a newsletter that provides links to reviews, sneak peeks, ad space, and more. So follow me on Twitter at Bex Goose, that's B-E-X-G-O-O-S, to start getting week daily reviews. Find all the info you need, including the link to sign up for my newsletter, in the thread pinned to my profile. And feel free to get at me if you need a recommendation. And now, back to your show.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you today on Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Can you believe that? January is almost over already. Man, time is going too fast. But here we are, pushing through the month. I hope everybody had a fantastic week. I have a great guest today. My guest is Andy Erickson. She's been on Dry Bar Comedy, Last Comic Standing, and she was in the Fox series Scream Queens. She's originally from Minneapolis. She kind of goes back and forth between Minneapolis and Los Angeles. She's a fantastic comedian, and very excited for this episode. So that's what's coming up on the show today. But before we get to that, a couple things on my end. If you're a comic that hasn't been on this podcast and you think you have a great bombing story that you would like to share, you should go check out our website, artofbombingpod.com/contest. We're running the March Bombness contest. It's a call for entries for people to call in and tell us their bombing stories, and then we're going to play them and vote on them, and ultimately somebody's going to win a $50 gift card, and then they'll get appear on the podcast. So if you haven't already been on the podcast and you want to be on the podcast, that's a good way to fast track a guest spot on the podcast. So check that out. On my front, as I've been on some other podcasts myself this last few weeks, and it's been fun. I've got to talk with some great people. So if you want to hear me talk to some other people on their podcast, some of it's about comedy, some of it was about marketing, some was just about talking about comic books, which was great. But you can check me out. You can look for Good Talks with Good People with Haley Hackett. That's available wherever you get podcasts. I was just on their recent episode that just came out. I was also on the most recent episode of Comics Who Love Comic Books with Brett Singer. You can check that podcast out wherever you get podcasts. And I will be on an upcoming episode of the Zach Lyman podcast. You may remember Zach was on The Art of Bombing just a few episodes ago. And I got to be a guest on his podcast. And we had a good chat about marketing and making social media content and all that sort of stuff. So keep an eye on that. And I got some other podcast appearances coming up, but I'm going to wait till it's closer until they're actually coming out before I talk about them, because I just recorded another one yesterday with another comic, and that was a good time too. But when that comes out, I'll mention it. So I think that's all we got to talk about right now. So if you haven't done so, you know what to do. Hit that subscribe button. Hit those like buttons. Hit those share buttons. Engage with the content. Interact. Tell us how you feel about the posts. We have you can join the community. We have a Facebook group, Art of Bombing Pod, that I'm trying to gear towards getting better at comedy. So if you're a comic, that you're new to comedy and you want to learn more about comedy, join the group. I encourage everybody. It's the whole purpose is to get better together and find our success through our failure. So check that out. All that information is available on the website, artofbombingpod.com. You can follow all our social media on all platforms. We are artofbombingpod. And that's going to do it for all this business. Here is my conversation with Andy Erickson. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
When I was younger, I grew up in a theme park. Yeah. Yeah. The theme of the park was trailer. I have a lot of nerdy friends, and nerds can be great, but sometimes they can be super annoying. Right, guys? Right? Like, I have a nerdy friend, and he's always asking me super nerdy questions, you know? Like, the other day, he was like, "Hey, what's your favorite element?" I'm like, "I don't care." He's like, "Come on, what's your favorite element?" So I punched him in the face. I was like, "The element of surprise!" You can tell a lot about someone based on what their favorite class is. You know, like I was talking to this little girl the other day, and I was like, "Hey, what's your favorite class?" And she said, "Upper middle class." And I was like, "Homeschool." I go to the doctor a lot, and I don't really mind, but I always hate when the doctor finds out I'm a comedian, you know? Because I was there recently, and a doctor found out I was a comedian, and he was like, "Oh, well, laughter is the best medicine." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, crying's the affordable generic brand."
Are you back in Minnesota or are you in L.A.?
Yes.
With this pandemic, everybody's just like all over.
I know. It's so weird. After every show, I'm like, "Okay, what time zone are you in?" Whenever anyone wants to book me, I'm like, "I have no idea." Yes, I'm in Minnesota for who knows how long until comedy's back.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I just seen today that apparently Governor Walz is going to open things back up. Hopefully. So hopefully comedy will be coming back a little bit in this area anyway.
Yeah, I know a few places were able to do it pretty carefully and get it opened up. But man, it's still scary. Like, I'm
oh,
so
absolutely.
Scared. I don't know. It's yeah. Like I did a show. It's like, yeah, I need money. But it's also just like, I don't want a hospital bill.
Yeah, nope, that's for sure.
Oh,
I totally
God.
Get that.
I mean, I already have hospital bills, and it turns out if you're super poor, you don't have to pay them.
Oh, well, hey, that's I guess, one benefit of being super poor.
Yeah, it's like a weird line. It's like, do I want to eat or whatever? Anyway.
Yeah. I definitely hear that, that's for sure. Oh, man, yeah. It's yeah, just it's crazy with everything. I get that risk too, because it's, you know, I did a few, was doing some stuff before things shut down again, and it's like, you know, because I was getting ready for a dry bar, and it was yeah, and I was like, well, I have to perform because it's coming up. but that's still that risk. It was like, yeah, it's going to be my luck. I'm going to go do these shows and then catch Corona.
Oh my gosh.
And then not get to do the taping, but everything went good. So.
Oh, good. Did you do the taping?
Excuse me. I did. Yeah.
Yay. How did they do it? Did they have a crowd?
They did reduce capacity. And cool. So it was more like a comedy club than a theater. Like traditionally it was more theater seating, I think, before. And now it felt like a comedy club because they had tables set up everywhere, you know, and they only limited to like 50 people, I think.
Okay.
So, so it wasn't a lot of people, but yeah, it was like tables were spread out. So it felt like being in a comedy club.
Yeah.
Instead of a theater, but.
I'm glad it wasn't over Zoom.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's for sure. That would have been very different. I know. I see you've been doing some stuff over Zoom, doing some virtual shows. How has that been going for you?
It's been really fun to do Zoom shows because so many times I do a show and there's so many people who like want to go but they can't, or it's like it's cost prohibitive, or it's far, or they have family, whatever. So I was able to do a show and get like 100 people to come in. And that was felt really cool to be like, oh, I'm a draw on Zoom. Like, people who like to stay home with their kids. That's my fan base. but I did like a unicorn, a comedy show with some of my friends. And it was really, really fun. And afterwards, we did like some games, did some unicorns. We told some jokes, did some sets. And afterwards, I was like, okay, if anyone just wants to stay on and chat. So there was like maybe 30 or 40 people who just literally hung out.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was really fun. So I've been kind of doing that. And we did that after Tommy Ryman's show too, after his New Year's Eve show. We did a fake countdown and then I'll just kind of hung around.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, yeah. I've done some of the virtual stuff, but not really hanging out afterwards. It was just pretty much as soon as the show was over, everybody was like, I'm out.
I typically do my set and then I like play Pokemon Go while I watch.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
It's just like, normally you'd like hang out or like shoot the shit, but it's really hard because only one person can talk at a time and comedians don't all talk at the same time. Like, who's going to get the joke in? It's like Jeopardy. We have to buzz in and then you get the joke. and then if people go in, there's just silence as the voices clash.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is another thing nice about those shows too. Like you can, it's more like listening to comedy, you know, like you can.
Yeah.
You can hide yourself if you don't want to be seen. So you can be doing other things without, you know, getting in trouble.
It's great. It's like at a club. It'd be so weird if I was like folding my laundry, you know, or like taking out the garbage.
Yeah.
I do like the power of being able to just mute people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, they're like, oh, you're blending something. Okay. Like that normally doesn't happen in a club unless you're in a juice bar or something, but it still is tricky because you have to figure out like who's the one talking. So it's
yes.
Like in a club, it's a lot easier to know, oh, that's the guy, send over the ushers to get him out. But in this, you're kind of just like, oh, is it my aunt? Is it Patty? Is it Joe? And you're just kind of like, who should I mute? But yeah, anyways.
Yeah, especially if you're watching speaker mode, because it's hard to see where that box is going. And like, as soon as somebody like, any little sound, it like switches back and forth. Yeah,
that's pretty cool too. I think if you make really fast movements, it'll go to you too.
Oh, probably. I wouldn't be surprised. The way technology is.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of technology, I have my magic wand with me here.
Oh, nice.
I found it while cleaning.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, so Lumos. Hold on, let me do my Nox. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Doing magic tricks here.
Yeah, here's Lumos. There we go.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I know. It's pretty cool. I'm going to tell you, I'm not a real magician. I can just do it with this.
It wasn't
my wand. Yeah.
You should have just let me think that. I thought it was like a remote control wand is what I thought. Like, I thought it, because... They did remote controls that were shaped like magic wands. So like you could like hook it up to like TVs and things like that. So it was like a universal remote or whatever, and you could do that. That's what I thought that was.
See, no, this is actually a hand carved wand that I ordered on Etsy. I picked the length and then like the style, and then I painted it with nail polish.
Oh, nice.
I put in multiple hours of work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I went to Wizard Camp, but there's no more Wizard Camp because of the pandemic.
Yeah, not a whole lot of anything now because of the damn pandemic.
It's happening where, like, I'll be with a group of people and I'll be, like, sad that something's not happening. Like, I'll be like, man, I'm just so bummed there's not Wizard Camp. And then someone always goes, there's not anything. Like, and I'm like, yeah, I know, but can I be sad about certain things at a time? They're like, there's not. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's like quite reminding me that everything shut down.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. There's no comedy clubs open right now. Like nothing's open. I'm like, yeah, I know, but comedy is. I want to start a new topic of conversation about comedy clubs, so I'm bringing it up. And then, anyway.
Oh, no, that's a good point. I could totally see that frustration. And here I am. I'm being that person, too. You're like, I didn't get to go. I was like, well, everything shut down.
I'm sure I knew it, too, because it's all we can think about. And then at the same time, it's like, it's still, even though we're talking about things shutting down, it's like, well, people are dying. And we just kind of forget about that part. We're just like, man, I can't go to Chipotle and wait in line, and they're like, people are dying. And they're like, yeah, but I like being able to see the rice before it got put into my bowl.
Oh man, that is so true. Oh, that's funny. Now, you do a little bit of acting and stuff too. Were you doing anything prior to the pandemic? Did that cause you to lose? I mean, I know everybody's lost stuff as far as, you know, comedy gigs and stuff go. But did you have anything in the works or anything that?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I had been working, I was going to be on this America's Got Talent. So I was prepping for that, and I taped my first audition, and I'd been like practicing my set. But then when the pandemic went, I wasn't comfortable going in, and then I was going to be moving, and I wasn't comfortable with people coming into the house. And then I was in the hospital, and I ended up just getting cut from the show.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
They didn't tell me exactly why. And they made it clear, like, no, it's not because you don't want to be on camera or not because you're remote. But I was just like, I felt like it just wasn't as simple as if there wasn't a pandemic, I could have gone in, lived in LA. I could have done the future round. Mm-hmm. But it was just a big mess. So that was kind of nuts. And then just with acting and stuff, I've been more focusing on screenwriting and comedy. And I had actually started the year before, I went on a tour and I got to headline a bunch of clubs for the first time, like a bunch of A and B room clubs. And I held my own. I had great sets and drew people in. So I was really pumped for like the next year to get to come back. And I wasn't able to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. Well, hopefully when things get back to normal, you'll get to go back to where you were. I suppose Last Comic Standing probably really helped with that too.
Oh yeah.
Getting to that, up to that headline.
Yeah. I just started headlining my own shows and stuff before I moved to LA. And then I got on Last Comic Standing. And then I got to headline, clubs and stuff. So that was so fun. And then I've been doing colleges too, headlining colleges, which I think is a great way to like work your chops too, because they're really hard. If you can do an hour cold in a cafeteria with the lights on while people are doing their homework and still have an okay show, you can headline a club where they're literally warmed up. You have an MC, a feature, and then you just go in the sweet spot. You do your hour or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I was like, that's a piece of cake. it's just fun.
Yeah, I know the college gigs. That's where a lot of stories are come from.
Yeah, and I love it. The kids are awkward. It's just so interesting group of people, and they're all so sweet. And I love hanging out afterwards. And like, there were two kids who both went by themselves, and I was like, "Are you guys friends with each other?" They're like, "No, I don't think you guys should be friends." And they exchanged phone numbers, and I'm like, "Yes, I'm making people be friends."
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah. Comedy bringing people together.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if we've ever met in person. I know I've seen you live though, because when I first started doing comedy like 10 years ago, I saw you at Acme. I came up here to do some open mics, and you were one of the comics that was on that open mic or whatever.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I can't remember either, but I feel like I've known you for a while.
Yeah, we've been, through social media and stuff, definitely names have probably crossed paths. I mean, I've been following your career for a while because I was immediately a fan after that open mic. You were so funny.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, I love that open mic. And I get to be so silly and weird and just like, that's kind of where I found my voice, and I get to be silly. But what's weird is like, it doesn't quite translate the silliness and like in the momentness of my mm-hmm. act that I think people really like is like, even when I'm headlining or featuring or whatever, and even when I do showcase sets where a lot of people are, it's fun when the crowd's hot to do whatever you want, but like, I love doing new jokes and like breaking out and just being silly. And I think people are drawn to that. But when I do like tape sets for TV, there's no room for any of the random silliness that I allow myself to do, because you have such a small period of time and you have to get all your jokes approved beforehand. So it's just mm-hmm. like a weird thing. So I don't think I come across as me in tape sets. I have some like up on YouTube where it's like me being silly and stuff, but like TV sets, stuff like that, it's more this like polished one-liners, solid like jokes. But yeah, so.
How did you approach that with Dry Bar? Because they're a little looser. Because I know you did a Dry Bar comedy special, and I know they're a little looser. I mean, they don't really, you don't have to run through what you're doing. They just have, this is, you know, be clean, you know.
Oh, I had to submit all my jokes in writing to Dry Bar.
Did you really?
Yeah. So I submitted, and yeah, for sure. And it was still loose. They would still... It was definitely like you could have fun or whatever, but I think, and I did, I did have some moments where I was kind of a little off book and silly, but it was like, these are my set jokes and these are the jokes I want to make sure I get out.
Yeah.
And it was fun being able to do two sets too. So I had some jokes different in each set so that they had more to like pull from. So it was still fun, but I think the pressure of it being recorded and being, this is going to be forever, this is your special, did make me a little, I just wasn't quite myself. Like, I still had a lot of fun, but even on stage, it was like, it wasn't that same flow or audience that I get when I'm just like, I'm out there and I don't know what I'm going to say next. And that's what's fun, because like, they don't know and I don't know, and I'm just so excited. But like, I knew exactly what I've been doing. I did the set like 100 times. You know, so it was like, I knew what I wanted to tell, because I have this fear too of forgetting my jokes, because I do forget my jokes. And I tell one-liners, so there are shows where I have to do 100 jokes, like not anymore, I do more stories, but if I'm telling 100 jokes and I have to do them in a specific order, it's so easy to forget.
Oh yeah.
Even if I'm doing like 10 jokes, it's like so easy to forget, and then it just throws me off and I get in my head. It's like doing longer jokes, though, is nice, because then you can just have like a chunk.
I really admire people who do pretty much just one-liners. Like, that just fascinates me, because it's like, weird. You know, like if you're doing stories, most of the time these stories are coming from your life. So they're already in your memory. So like, even if you don't say them word for word, you're going to get the gist of the story. Or like with one-liners, I mean, you have to get it right, or the joke doesn't work, you know?
No. And then you can't start with the end. You have to start with the beginning.
Yeah. It's got to be the setup punch. Like, I remember watching, when I first kind of started comedy, I saw Dwight York live.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. Like, just one after another for a whole hour. And I was just like, that's insane.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And Chuck Bartel, have you seen him?
I don't know that I have. Who, what was that name again?
He's a Minneapolis guy, Chuck Bartel. He does one liners.
Okay.
He kind of does like a stoic. He tells his jokes one after another very carefully, and then they'll get really dark and twisted. And yeah, he uses note cards sometimes too. And then like when they don't work, he'll just throw it on the ground, and that always gets left. Yeah. But I've always liked one-liners. It's weird. I like them because, like, you know, I love Mitch Hedberg's one-liners. George Carlin tells one-liners too. I read his books. He's got like a bunch of just really good one-liners. Mm-hmm. But then I started going away from it because it just didn't feel like one-liner comics were the comics that audiences were connecting to and like building relationships with. Yes, they love them, but I just felt like these people who they could be personal with, I like the connection you could have with the audience. Yeah. And I just started feeling like, oh, it's not me. And I felt all this pressure to like not just tell silly jokes and like be me. But I'm starting to go back to realizing that like, I shouldn't feel pressure to do what I think I need to do. I should just, my goal is to just make people laugh and to have a good time and to like just whatever my goal is, they can be whatever it is. So I don't want to feel like comics who tell one-liners, like as if that's not as honorable, which I did feel that for a while, but it's like, God, one-liner comics, you hear them and I watch them, I go, God, it's so good. That joke is so good. And nothing will ever be funnier than that. I'm like, man, I'll watch a one-liner comic who's crushing and be like, gosh, it's so, that power they have, it's so good. But then you hear a comedian telling a story and it's such a great story and you're rolling, you're laughing, you're just like, no, that's the best way. That's the best way. It's like, there's no best way. I love that there's a variety. I don't want everyone to be doing the same thing. I don't want everyone to be doing politics. I don't want everyone to be talking about their childhood. I want everyone to just do everything. So there's all these varieties of just comedy that some people like and some people hate. It's like people expect a comedian, like they'll hate a comedian and they think, well, I need to tell them that I don't like them. Or I need to make it clear that like, I don't like that comic. But like, we don't do that the same way with musicians. We kind of let musicians have their fan base. And we move on with it. But whereas now it's like people feel the point, like on Reddit and stuff like that, to like call people out and be like, they're not funny, they're not funny, they're not funny. And it's like, no one gives a fuck about your opinion. Like your opinion means nothing. You either laugh or don't. You have no power here. So go. I just feel like, yeah, people think comedians need to be loved by everyone. That's just not.
No, I mean, really, you need to be loved by the audience in front of you. And when I say loved, I don't mean that they have to absolutely love you, but the majority of the audience needs to be laughing.
Yes. And what I say, because I get a lot of hate, just I think everyone does.
I stopped. When Reddit first came out, I started, you know, I put some stand-up shots out and stuff, and then I was just like, you know, what do I care? Yeah. Like, I don't need your guys' opinion. I don't give, you know. No.
And what the fact of the matter is, you get those people who might send you a tweet or say they don't like you because they like watched a clip online or they saw your set on TV or they saw your dry bar or whatever. You put them in your audience. You put those same people in your audience. They're going to be having a great time.
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
It's so different when you're in the room and it's like you're connecting and like, and you see that they're killing and you see everyone around you laughing and you go like, oh yeah, this is fun. Like rarely are you just going to sit there and judge. I mean, some people do, but it's like, how can it be that I go into these clubs and everyone's laughing, you know, essentially, or people are crushing, but then there's like a clip of my dry bar special online and you have some people who really like it, but then you get people talking about how like, oh, she's not funny. She's horrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. People just being so mean. It's like, how is that possible that people think that I'm that bad when it's like, there's so much evidence that this person is good. But I just want to make you feel bad. And I do. I love Dry Bar. They have some amazing fans. But they have some people there who are just, who watch them and they're just so entitled. It's not just Dry Bar fans. It's all comedy fans.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think part of that, like, I think people who watch comedy, like, on their own are more judgmental. Because laughter's contagious. Like you said, when you're in the room watching, you're going to have a good time because everybody around you is having a good time.
Yeah.
But when you're watching Dry Bar at home, it's you, so you're like, they better be funny and make me laugh, you know?
You're just alone, and you're sad, and you're sitting there by yourself, and of course you're not, and you're just like, oh, this person's not funny. Well, maybe you should have pre-gamed. Maybe you should have listened to some other comedy beforehand instead of jumping into my clip.
Yeah, exactly.
Telling me that the story about my dad dying isn't a real joke and it's not real comedy. It's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. The comments and stuff people put on like comedy. And I feel like I really do like agree with what you were saying too. Like like with musicians, there's not as much pressure. Like people will either like a band or they won't, but that's that. But with comedians, it really feels like people go out of their way to either like them or dislike them. You know, like there's stuff on Twitter all the time, you know, people hating on comics for this or that or whatever. And it's like, just what do you care?
No, like why is that part of their life to take time out of their day to hate something? Take that time to create something or to love something or to find joy. It's but that's just, I don't know. I get it. It's human nature and people like to be right. And if they see, they like to feel like they were right. Like, I love that feeling too. I'm right. This person shouldn't be doing this. I love being right. I'm so right. Oh my God. Look at me likes I got for being right. Wow. Being right could be a job. That's my job. I don't have a job. but being right is my job.
And that sounds about right.
Yeah. Right. I know, I love it. I love it. I love this podcast, The Art of Bombing.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, and that's a good transition to get into the bombing portion. I would love to hear your story of a time where you felt like you bombed or the show was really bad.
Okay, so I know, I 100% know I bombed on this show. And I don't, and I have no excuses for the bombing part because it was a hot audience. But I was super nervous. So this is the time I bombed on national television for Last Comic Standing. So I did my first round of Last Comic Standing. This was in 2015. And I had a great set. Like, I did my 3 minutes. It was super easy. I did my, like, 7 jokes in 3 minutes. Had a great set. Crushed it. Like, judges loved me. Audiences warmed up. Super fun. It was kind of just like, who is this girl? Like, people were just like, just this weird girl coming out telling her weird one-liners. Cool. And moved on. Sweet. The next round, then, I had to do it, like, a whole new, like, 4 minutes of jokes. Should have been super easy. But I was so nervous. Like, I was so nervous that, like, even beforehand, like, I was just pacing around and I just didn't want to forget my jokes because I'd had like 4 or 5 months, maybe even 6 or 7 months to work on my first 3 minute set. And I'd done that set hundreds of times. Like, I had to go through 3 rounds to even get on Last Comic Standing. I had to have 3 rounds of judging to then make it on. I got told I made it, and then they said, nope, we need to see you one more time and do one more contest. So, like, yeah, so then I made it on. First set went great, but then I had a week to prepare for the next round because they tape them all, like, really close together. And I hadn't even anticipated I would be moving on. And so I'm like, okay, now I need to string together. It wasn't really that hard, like 5 jokes. So picking, okay, what are the 5 best jokes that I can tell on national television that people are going to love and it will be strong and just that will work together as a set? I can't mention Walmart. I can't mention Taco Bell. I can't, like, all these different rules. You can't redo a joke you did before, which is fine, but it's like, I've had, like, my opener and my closer, and I was, okay, so I don't have my opener. I don't have my closer anymore. I've had other jokes I can open with, but I just didn't know if they made sense for TV. Anyways, I'm getting all in my head. I go up, the crowd's hot. Everyone's been doing great, but I walk on and I do my first joke. And I was so nervous that the timing was just off and the audience just didn't, like, they just didn't really laugh. Like, they were kind of just looking at me like, was that a joke? And I'm like, oh gosh. And I know in that moment, I'm like, well, I'm done. Like, I'm done. Like, you can't, like, I'm bombing. And, like, how do you get out of it? Yeah. I'm just like, well, I can't do anything except the jokes I prepared. I can't say anything off script in case I say something that I can't say on TV and then they can't use my act. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'll do my second joke. I did my second joke. And it was just nothing. It was just, again, it was just another nothing joke, which I'm like, these jokes are good, but it's not just the material. It's the audience can just see your fear. Yeah. And then I was like, I was in my head just, I think I was so sad because, like, well, now it's over. I'm going to be on TV bombing forever. Like, what are the judges going to say? And then I was like, okay, well, just do your third joke. And I couldn't remember my third joke.
Oh, no.
Nothing was coming into my head. I was just like, okay, so I can't tell a joke I did before. And I don't know what I'm going to do next. And I was just standing there. And I was just like in shock. Just like, oh, my God. And what I did, though, I just said, I'm a cat. Meow, 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 meow. And I just meowed until I remembered my jokes. And I meowed for a few seconds, like maybe 10 seconds. And then I remembered my jokes. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I just went into my jokes and I went into my third joke. And I think the audience laughed really hard too when I said, I'm a cat, meow, meow, meow. Because I think there was this release of just like, oh, thank God she said something. This was so painful. And then when I told my next joke, they were just like, what is this? Like, I think everyone was just, it was just relief. And they were just seeing me. And I think they were just happy for me. I think they're like, yes, yes, okay, good. And so they were laughing. And then like the judges were laughing. And then I like finished off my set. And then my set was just way better than it ever would have been had I not like forgotten my jokes, pretended to be a cat, and then finished off the set. And I was just, so at the end of it too, I was just like, okay, good. Like I did it. I did it. I'm not a total loser. I finished the set. And the judges were just so just like wowed by like, what was that? Like, who does that? Why were you a cat? Like that it just became memorable. And like, it became like this whole new thing beyond just like bombing on TV. Cause it could have, I've cried on stage, I think 3 times. So I could have just cried. But I'm glad I pulled and did something different. And then when it eventually aired, they made it look like it was planned. They swapped the order of my jokes around. So then my closer went first. So I had me have a big laugh, and then they did another joke. And then I think they cut a joke, and then I just go, meow, meow, I'm a cat. And then it goes into my next joke. And then I just have like this solid set all the way
through. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Like, magic. But it was still, it was, so I have that clip somewhere. I think it's on Vimeo or something of where they made it, where they made it look like I had a good set. But yeah, that was the,
yeah, that's amazing. The, the power of editing.
I know. I know. I'm so happy for it.
I didn't feel very good about one of my sets at Dry Bar, but then I was like, you know what? They know what they're doing. They're going to be able to take all of this and make it good, or it won't be good. But I mean, they have the power and the resources to make it look good. So,
totally. I know. It's like that. I wish on mine too. I wish that maybe they would have added in a little more laughter. I'm like, I didn't even like, I watched it and I was like, this is fine. Like, I didn't even give any notes. I'm just like, this is fine. Like, but there was like, oh, there was one point where like I told the joke and then it cut to an audience member who was just staring at me, like not laughing. I'm like, hey, can you switch that to someone smiling and laughing, please? Because like, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I could just see that in the special. They're just like, well, see, even the audience didn't think they were funny.
I know, right? And it's like, oh, no. It's like, on America's or Last Comic Standing, they did a good job of making everybody look good.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, that was kind of a neat thing. Like, I was always a fan of that show, like, even before I started comedy. Mm. And to see it, like, progress over the years and then come back, it's kind of neat to see how that worked out. I feel like they really did a good job towards the end with how they were doing the show, because when they first started it was kind of dumb.
Yeah, they were just like, yeah, TV, let's put them all in a house.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think fans do like that stuff, but comedians are just like, we don't have time for this, like we need to go to work, like we need to do gigs, and like we need to get out of this house.
Yep, exactly. Right. Yeah, living here is not gonna get us booked.
Yeah, it got. I think Wanda Sykes and Paige Hurwitz took it over, and they told us when we got there, like, okay, we want to make you look good. We're not gonna do some show where like we just show everyone like bombing in front of the judges and we make fun of them. No, we want people to love comedy because you guys are talented, and they searched the entire country for people. And yeah, it's like, that's what we just need. I think people do need to see more comedy so they're more familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And so that they start to build this joy and build fandom. I think it'd be awesome if we had comedy specials that aired like in prime time, like on NBC and CBS and like ABC. Like, I guess now with Netflix, people can watch them, but it'd be nice just to get the entire country collectively like enjoying stand-up, like story.
Oh, absolutely. That's that's a brilliant idea. I mean, they really could do, like, you know, bringing a show like Premium Blend or something like that into network television. They could easily do that on like NBC, especially, you know, and NBC is a good example because they're, you know, they really specialize in comedy, it seems like, you know, like a lot of their hit shows or some of their comedic sitcoms. And I think Fox could probably pull it off too. I don't know about CBS or ABC, but either way, but there's enough there that I think they could easily pull off a primetime comedy show like that, where I think people would watch.
Yeah, I think so too. And it, I mean, it might take a little while to build up, but it's like with any show, you can't just abandon it. I feel like so often they abandon a show because it's not getting the ratings they want. It's like, I often don't hear about shows till they're in their third season because it takes time to like build up.
That's like the worst, when you hear about a show and you're like, oh, this is cool, and you get caught up, and then they're like, oh, now it's time to quit, and you're like, what? I just found this show, and now it's over?
Oh, man, what? Seinfeld is done?
It's like, what?
I know.
I actually just found that with a show that Those Who Can't. I mean, I knew it was out, but I didn't have cable or access to watch it, you know, or whatever. And now it's on HBO Max. And so I watched it and I was like, oh my God, why is this still not going? Because it was really good. I thought it was really good.
I remember that show, they originally aired on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
It was in a contest to see, like,
It was part of a contest when they were getting ready to launch and do their own, content. They ended up ultimately Amazon passed on it and didn't do it, but they did win that contest.
Well, one of my professors in college was actually one of the main executives over at Amazon who set up original programming. And he was talking about that because we were like, why don't you do more of that? Like, why don't you do more where you have audiences decide what shows to pick up and then you can go from there. They said, well, for so many reasons, shows don't get picked up. And they end up having a ton of angry viewers who were just so mad that their shows didn't get through. And they just had to deal with all this just like anger and frustration. And it was just bad for them publicity wise. We're just like, nope, next time we're just going to pick some shows and either you like them or you don't, because that didn't happen. You guys are crazy. TV fans are. They're freaking weird. And wild. It's like people love their shows, and it's just that's their life. And there's millions of people who are just that's just.
I mean, Game of Thrones is a good, good example of that. I mean, people are doing, you know, freaking change.orgs to get the writers to redo the series. Like, what?
I know. And I was on, so I didn't do much acting. But I did. I got cast in Scream Queens on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Ryan Murphy show, and it was so, so, so fun. But like, literally, it was my first ever time auditioning for a television show, auditioning for anything, even a commercial. And I booked the show. So it's just like after that, I was like, oh, acting's easy. But then I went on audition, so I was like, oh no, auditions suck, and I'm not very good. But I got to act in a real television show, and it was so fun. I got to be in like 4 episodes, and I got to like have my own trailer. Well, I had a third of a trailer. It was in my contract. You get a third of a trailer. And but then one time, one of the main cast was gone, and I got to use their trailer, and it was so nice. It was like, it's like they just make like a nicer trailer for like the better actors. And like, we just put like one where like the couch's fabric is kind of like brown and a little fuzzy, but it's nice. But then there's just like pure just like leather and everything's shiny and gold. It's like it's still just like a trailer home. But anyways, so I got to be in that show, and from being on that show, and I had maybe like 10 lines in all of it. I was barely in it, but I got in the first episode I was in, I got to do a few scenes and stuff like that. But I ended up getting like a bunch of just like fans from having a small part in the show. And what was really great too is everyone was so nice. Like, I got so many compliments, and now on my Instagram post every once in a while, someone will just go like, yes, queen, or they're like, my queen, all this just random stuff where it's like I was barely in the show, and I was expecting people to be like to tear me apart or to make fun of my looks or to just make fun of my acting ability or whatever. But like, it was so supportive, like these like fans who just like love the show and love everyone who's a part of a show. It was a really cool experience, and I'm friends with some of them now who were huge. They're huger fans of like Abigail Breslin and Billy Lord, but yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, that's pretty cool. That is one cool thing, I suppose, like with, you know, TV fans and things like that, because they do get so obsessive, like, mm-hmm. especially yeah. if they really like a show. Oh, it's kind of totally. like all those CW shows. Like,
yeah,
so many people are fans of those, and it doesn't matter, like, what role you have. They're like, oh, this is the greatest.
They just want to get as close as they can to, like,
yep.
Emma Roberts. Like, oh, you were on set with her? And then, like, they'll ask me questions. Some of them sent me presents. Like, some of them made, like, videos reenacting scenes that, like, of me. And it was really scary because I got an Instagram video of two people reenacting my death scene. And it scared me because I get hung in the episode. That's how I die. And they reenacted it. Well, like, so I'm walking down the hallway and I find a plate of cookies. I'm like, oh, cookies. And I'm, like, eating the cookies. And then I get hung from above. So they reenacted that. And I was like, oh, that's so cute, but also terrifying. Like, 12-year-old boys are reenacting my death.
And then, like, oh, man.
I wish I would have saved it, but I was so scared I just deleted it. But I wish.
Yeah, I don't blame you on that. Yeah. That's crazy. What's, like, as far as, like, fans doing random stuff like that, what's is that the craziest thing somebody sent you?
No, I have one fan. He's a nice guy, and I've gotten to know him, but he just has, like, a twisted sense of humor, as they do in the shows, and I think it's hilarious, but, like, it freaked out my family. He sent us, like, a Halloween gift, and it was this box. And inside the box, and I didn't know what it was going to be, was a vial of blood, a vial of hair, a knife, a bunch of candles, and a book of curses to set up, like, and then a photo of himself to set it up as, like, a shrine to him and to do, like, a ceremony using the blood and the hair and the knife.
Wow.
He looked so terrified. That's how everyone looked. I was like, this is hilarious.
It can be. I mean, I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. So I'm like, to me, that's terrifying.
I know, right? And I'm just like, oh, this is so funny. And my husband's like, who gave this person your address? And I'm like, well, I like presents. I don't know. He's actually like a really nice guy, and it was funny, and it was akin to the show. I'm not scared at all. It's a nice knife, too. It works. It's a good knife.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, good knives are good to have, actually.
Yeah.
I that's my choice of weapon, mm-hmm. knives and axes. Like, I don't own firearms, but my house is knives are everywhere. My fiance gives me crap about it. I'm like, hey, you never know, man. Somebody might come in when I'm in the bathroom, and now I got a throwing knife here. So
right by the toilet.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that. Have a knife.
Yeah, like. All over the house.
I have like pencils.
they could work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. You'd really have to put some momentum to throw them to get them to stick. But
I'm like, wait, and I'm like sharpening the pencil. Hold on.
Just give me 5 minutes.
Oh dang it! Ten broke off, and then I put it.
Gotta start over.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Oh, that's hilarious. Now, the bumming of bombing, the feeling you get when you bomb, that dreadful feeling, how long does it typically last for you, and how has that changed over the years for you?
Yeah, it used to terrify me when I started, so much so that, like, my third time ever on stage, I thought I was about to bomb and thought people were about to heckle, but no one heckled, and I wasn't technically even bombing, and I just started crying on stage.
Oh,
I was
wow.
just so scared. And afterwards, like, I went to the bathroom and I wrote an apology note, like, on a piece of toilet paper. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so unprofessional. Like, with my pen just in there, like, I can't believe I cried. And he brought me back on stage and had me do another joke. And then the joke went good. And I walked off and he's just like, yeah. And then I was there with my dad. And he was just like, after that set, seeing me cry and then go to the bathroom and come back and still just be like torn up. He's like, did you learn anything from today? Like, did you learn? Are you growing as a comedian? Did you learn anything? And I was like, I learned not to cry on stage. And he's like, well, you know, I thought you should have already known that. But I'm glad. I'm glad now you know for sure. But that was not the last time I cried on stage. Two more times I cried. But yeah, I feared it so bad because when I first started doing comedy, I never wanted to be a performer. I never wanted to be in front of people. Like, I was so self-conscious about my appearance. I thought I just didn't want people looking at me. And so I was like, why would I ever go on stage? But I had friends and family encouraging me because I developed my sense of humor of just being sarcastic. And I started doing it because I wanted to be a writer. And I was told, if you want to write on SNL, that was my dream, be a writer on SNL, you have to perform so that way they can find you. Mm-hmm. And which still, it's like, what are the odds? But I was delusional. You need to be delusional to be a comedian. I was very delusional.
True story.
So then I started doing comedy and I loved it. Like, it was great because people weren't judging me based on what I looked like. They weren't, not until YouTube, but like after shows, they'd be, oh, you're really funny. It wasn't like, oh, you're too ugly to do stand up, or mm-hmm. oh, you're not pretty enough, or oh, you're not talented, or whatever. It was just like people liked you and they laughed. And if you didn't have a good set, it didn't really matter. Like, after set, if you bomb, people don't search you out and go, oh my God, you bombed. You're so bad. They just forget about you, which is fine.
Yep.
Because in comedy, you have to be really good at failing. And I actually am. I'm really good at failing. I've got this skill now. It's like, I don't even really think about it. Like, if I have a bad set, it doesn't really bother me. I just move on. And it doesn't, like, eat away at me. And I've gotten really good at just in my life of, like, oh, I've submitted to a festival. Oh, I didn't get in. Who cares? Keep submitting. Keep trying. Keep going. Bombing is part of the process. And now it's like, when I came back from, the pandemic, and I was going to be doing my first live set in like 6 months. Like, I was asked, like, oh, are you afraid? Like, are you afraid you're going to bomb? Like, cause you haven't done jokes in so long. I was like, I don't give a shit if I bomb. I don't care. I just want to be on stage. Who cares? I'm not even worried about it. Like, it's like, what, who cares? Like, why, what does it matter? Like I'm just gonna go up there. I'm gonna tell my jokes. I'm going to have fun. And if I don't crush, then it's just like, who cares?
Like, yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
It's like, it's just fun. Like, I mean, I guess if there's a person who doesn't ever have like really good sets and you're constantly just doing bad, I get that. Yeah, that would be really hard. I don't know how those comics do it. They exist. I've seen them. I've done
it. Well, I think it's easy because they're so delusional about
it. Yeah.
Like, they don't, because I've definitely seen that too, where you see these comics that constantly do, you know, poorly. Yeah. But they get off stage and you're like, oh man, did you see that? I was great. And it's like, and then everybody else in the room's like, did we just watch the same thing? Are we not in the same room as the rest of us?
Crank down the delusion dial a little bit. But what is nuts though, and what I do love about stand-up, is no matter how bad someone is and for how long they're bad, like, yeah, I have people who it takes them a couple, 3 years, but like, everyone does get better. Because you are able to keep things that work. And as long as you know that something didn't work and then something did work, it's easy to tell when something does work. So even if you can't tell something didn't work, you know something does work. You compile all the things that work. And if you do it long enough, you can get a solid set of stuff that works. And you're still learning all these skills and you're getting immediate feedback. In a lot of fields, you don't get immediate feedback. In like painting or writing or even when you're playing piano or music, you don't get that feedback immediately. We're constantly getting feedback. So I love seeing people who start off just horrible, because everyone does. You start off horrible.
Oh, absolutely.
You can start off good, but you'll get so much better. But I love seeing people, giving them a couple of years and being like, holy shit, that person's a killer. Like, this is awesome. Look at them go.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I agree. I was that person. Like, I thought I was good. And then I went out to California and I was like, oh man, I suck. I seen some of the comics out there and I was like, yeah, I got some learning to do.
It's a weird thing is like, I don't know if you felt this way before I started doing comedy. I watched Comedy Central specials of just random comics. I knew who they were. Eventually, I'm sure I met some of them or whatever, but I'd be like, oh, these people aren't funny. Like, I was just like, this is the best that America has. I was like, what?
This looks easy.
Yeah, it looks so easy. And then you do, you're like, holy shit. And then you rewatch. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, that was brilliant. That was great. It was just like the setup.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like the setup or just like the crowd or just your jealousy. Your jealousy makes you not like someone where you go like, oh, they're not funny.
That definitely happens a lot. I feel like, especially because it seems like with comics, we're so like self-centered and it's like, I can't speak for all comics, but it seems like a lot of comics always get very bitter. We're always worried about what other people are doing instead of worrying about what we could be doing to get better.
Yeah, and, for sure.
And if you spent that energy getting better, it wouldn't matter what somebody else is getting because you'd be getting it too.
100%. Yeah. And it's like, I'll get like the pangs of like jealousy. I'm like, oh, I wish I could do that. But I also know that like the people who are making shit happen are working their asses off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see people, it's like, and sometimes maybe it's not that they are, maybe they don't quite have like the same originality or like, I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily a fan of like their type of comedy, but then I just see like how hard they're working and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Just like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a lot of people aren't a fan of what I do. And I've been told, I've had people like even kind of friends in their drunken states be like, saying that some of my things like weren't even real jokes. You're like, you're not even doing jokes or blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, oh, that's fine that you don't like what I do, because it's actually good to be different enough that there are people who know that you're funny, but don't like what you do. It's like, mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing. Like, I don't personally think like someone's funny, but I know that they're funny. And that's great too.
Oh yeah. That's yeah. Definitely something since I started doing comedy, probably before comedy, I wouldn't have thought mm-hmm. this way. Cause you know, you don't know whatever, but yeah. Now it's like, I can look at somebody, not be a fan of their comedy mm-hmm. or think that to me, they're not funny. They're just mm-hmm. not my personal brand.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I can totally respect them for what they're doing because I understand, like I can look mm-hmm. at somebody and be like, oh, I understand why people think that's funny and why people are laughing mm-hmm. at that joke, why it's a good joke. It's not my cup of tea, yeah, but I totally right. get it.
Totally.
And that's because the beauty of comedy, it's so subjective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's good too. Like you have to try to stand that. Like with you,
yeah.
you are different on stage. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I remember you from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because of that one open mic. You did 5 minutes and you stood out. I can maybe remember a couple of the other people that might have been on that open mic. Probably not. I mean, if I thought hard about it enough, I probably yeah. could. But I know for sure that's where I saw you. So it's good to stand out.
Yeah, I do miss that. Like, I miss that so much because I would just be weird and silly in the moment. And it's like, now I've been trying to like work on my showcase set, try to get on late night, try to do that. And like in LA, but still, I would still find opportunities in LA to use the stage time to just be silly and different and be weird. But over time, I think I am less fearless. Or not necessarily fearless, because it's like I remember that trend where the stakes weren't as high and I was just having fun. And the stakes aren't even really that high in LA. Like you can still bomb, it doesn't really matter. But like it just mm-hmm. felt different. Where it's like, that's why I'm excited about being back in Minnesota when clubs open up again, just to get back to my roots of just going onto an open mic stage, having this hot crowd and getting to just try new stuff and then be in the moment. Cause like I love, like I like to just whatever I'm thinking in my head, I like to share it with the audience and just like take risks. But what's also weird now too is like I used to be a lot edgier too, edgy, where I would tell these like shocking jokes, which I think a lot of comics still do, or they did more when you're younger. Where it's like now I'm pulling away from that, where like I'm not trying to do jokes that shock people, and that's harder yeah. too because
I feel like that's part of growing.
It is. I agree. Like when you first start out, you just want to shock people and you go like, okay, no, I want to like have like a message, or I want to do something that's surprising in a new way because shocking humor, blah, blah, blah. But it is weird. I'm very like embarrassed by some of the jokes I thought of and being like, oh, I thought that was funny. But it's like, I think that's just part of maturity.
I do too. And it's funny that you say that because I've still got like some of my jokes that I wrote when I first started.
Yeah.
And I like look at these jokes and I'm like, I can't believe I wrote that. I can't believe yeah. I said that out loud. You know, like it's
same
that.
Person.
And just like, oof, that was horrible. That's oh. a horrible thought. I can't believe I thought of it. And then I can't believe I thought it was funny.
To be fair, a lot of my jokes, I didn't think they were funny. I wanted people to hear them. I was like, I don't think this is funny. I'm going to see if you do, and then maybe I'll think it's funny. It is. It's like almost every joke, my one-liners, I go, this is so stupid. No one will ever laugh at this. And they laugh. And I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe I'm a genius.
Well, that's one of the things with one-liners. Mm-hmm. Some of the best one-liners are so dumb. Like,
yeah.
That's, I mean, I don't explain it. Yeah.
Like, I'll have a dumb joke and I don't know why it's fun. Like, I thought of it and I thought there was something there, but I'm like, why is this the joke that people like? It doesn't, anyways.
Oh, I totally get that. Because that to me, as when it comes to the writing process, it's so frustrating. Like, you can put all this time and effort into, like, I do mostly stories, you know, type of stuff. And
nice.
More wordy stuff. I do have some one-liners thrown in there, and I've written one-liners, but it's so aggravating to have, like, where you spend all this time working on an intricate bit where it's a story. Yeah. You're working on all these setup punches. You know, you put a lot of effort into this joke, and then you go do it, and it just, people are like, eh, I can take it or leave it. And then that one dumb one-liner that I thought of while doing whatever, this just random thought that popped in my head, and then I said it on stage, gets like this huge freaking applause break. So, just frustrates me so much. It's like, I'm glad, but also, I didn't put any effort into this.
And what sucks with that is like, oh, good, that's 30 seconds of your set. So you're like, oh, this is a great joke. It works great. But it's like, oh, but it's no time. It's just like, oh, it's done. You don't even need it. Like,
The
story, it's like you can get like a solid story that like twists and turns and people just laughing and just, and it's just like, oh, yeah, great. That's 10 minutes. I'm almost done.
Exactly. Yeah, I had a joke like that too, like a one-liner that I don't tell it because it's to me it's a little on the edge of being offensive, you know, like it's one of them things. It was funny, and if I say it on stage anytime, it always does well, but I'm just like, I hate this joke.
Yeah, I have that.
Just like, oh, so frustrating. Now, you kind of talked about a little bit about the being afraid and that, you know, because you said that's caused you to cry on stage a couple times. But when you feel like a joke is a bombing or you're bombing on stage, what kind of goes through your mind in that moment?
I know for a little while I'll be like thinking ahead to my set being like, oh, this whole set's going to be like this. And then like, oh, I have to get out of this. And I'll use like my saver lines and stuff like that, or I'll just make fun of it. But a lot of times what I do is if like my jokes aren't working is I just transition into crowd work. It's just talking to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
If I can bring them in and ask them a question, I can usually find something. And it's just a good opportunity then to use that set to then still grow in another way. So it's like, okay, if my jokes aren't doing good and I know that they're good, then it's like there's something off with the connection with the audience. So I just think, okay, I need to rebuild the connection with the audience so that they are on my side again and they're rooting for me. So then I just dive into the audience. Because it's like if a joke doesn't do, like I have jokes sometimes that just, they just don't hit. But I have my set planned out in a way too where I start off with my silly one-liners. And based on how those are going, I decide where I'm going to go next.
Oh, yeah. That
choose your own adventure. Yeah.
Because
if they don't like one joke, then I know they're not going to like these. So then I go into this. But yeah, a lot of times I just revert to crowd work. But I have it set up where it's like one-liners, and then I go into my health condition a little more. Still with one-liners, but they transition into like my health, like scoliosis and just stuff like that. And then I go into like stuff with losing my dad, and I have some stories with that. And then I go into stories about wizard camp where I have like chunks and stuff like that where I just kind of go. But a lot of times it doesn't really matter if a joke doesn't get a huge laugh because they're with you. And it's like not really bombing anymore. Because sometimes I just turn it into more like a conversation. And as long as people aren't heckling you, you just kind of continue with your set until you build at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to somebody else on here and, you know, I forget who they said was the quote, but basically it was like, as long as you're either funny or you're interesting.
Yeah. You know,
like that's what's important.
Totally.
If you're not funny, be interesting. That's kind of what, which makes sense. Do you have a background then in improv then a little bit or?
Actually, yeah. Like, I didn't really consider it a background improv until I realized what it was. But when I was in 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, I did something called Odyssey of the Mind or Destination.
I remember Odyssey of the Mind.
Yeah. And it got turned into Destination Imagination, where a group of kids would have to write a play, and then they had to improvise like a game and do like spontaneous. It was called spontaneous or whatever, but you did improvisation. So I didn't realize it till later. I was like, oh yeah, I'd been doing that. I'd been writing plays since I was in 4th grade. Like I was like writing little 7-minute plays. So I had a background in writing, and then improvising practices and games and stuff throughout my mm-hmm. life too. So I did have, I practiced when I was younger, and then I made YouTube videos. YouTube came out in 2005. I was in high school and I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe I can share something with the entire world. It's such a cool moment in time, that 2005. Like, I don't think people nowadays, they've always had a place where they can share anything with everyone forever. Like they just had mm-hmm. it. Like YouTube, we were like, oh my gosh. And so we were just constantly making YouTube videos, and I was developing my silliness and acting and comedy in those silly videos, just being silly and
mm-hmm.
doing that. Yeah.
So almost kind of a self-taught, just kind of just yeah. doing the stuff. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. yeah. I'm old enough to remember no internet. So I totally get what you're saying. Like now with younger people, this is yeah. all they know. It's like, I remember right. before YouTube even was a thing.
Yeah. And even before YouTube was a thing, I was the type of person who carried a video camera around and would videotape my friends. So I have just like footage in high school of me just having a camera around. And whereas now people look at those people, oh, you just want attention, blah, blah, blah. Or like, but it's like, no, that's how some people enjoy life, is by taping things and
mm-hmm.
and being behind a camera. Like, I think that's fine. I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel like some of the people, you know, especially, you know, when they're younger, look at Adam Goldberg, you know, mm-hmm. that did the show The Goldbergs, like oh. as a kid, like that whole like having a camera and filming stuff. And like he did that his whole childhood. And now
that's awesome.
he turned it into a TV show. And a lot of times at the end of the, you know, I don't watch it like regularly, but if it's on mm-hmm. or whatever, I'll watch it. But like at an end of an episode, they'll have like the scene from the TV show and then a scene from the actual home video. You know?
That's so, amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. And but that, you know, it kind of goes to that, like people who are, you know, obsessive and do that kind of creative stuff grow up to be creative people. I mean,
totally.
You hope, anyway.
Yeah, I hope so.
And then I was going to ask, what do you do to analyze your sets or try to work on, like, if a joke doesn't work, what do you do to try to improve it or figure out what went wrong?
Okay. So before my set, like at Acme, if it's open mic, I sit in the hallway and I go through my joke list. And if there's a joke, and I try to do mostly new with like a couple that I know are good to kind of gauge. And then I get my joke list ready. I do my set. And then afterwards, I immediately go through my set list and take notes. Like, I just kind of go through and I just go, okay, these ones work. These, like, because otherwise I won't remember. And I tape my sets. I have probably like 100 or 200 tapes, audio of my sets taped. I've never listened to a single one. But I have them. I have them. And it's kind of cool. Like, from like 2013, I have all these audio just recordings of full sets. With some notes in the set where I'll say like, oh, I did these jokes and these jokes work. But I probably have hundreds of jokes that did great and I forgot about them and never told them again.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't. I didn't.
I've actually.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to over. No, I was just going to say, I've got some, you know, a lot of old audio too. And I was actually at the beginning of the pandemic, I was going through and listening to some of them recordings and kind of the same thing where there was jokes that it was like, wow, why don't I tell that anymore? What,
yeah.
You know, I need to. So I was like going through and mining some of my old material just because I had the time.
And I like to, people will come up and like give me tags or like if someone tells me that they like a joke, cause like even if a joke doesn't do good, like I've had jokes that just do okay. Someone tells me they liked it and then that keeps me doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it really is that you got to try a joke a few times.
And oh, I think so too.
I like to tell a joke I've told before, and then while I'm on stage, say something without plan. So, like, I'll do my one-liner, and then I'll say something that I'm not planned. just to see what comes out. And that's how I build on one-liner jokes that have turned into one-liners that are now like six lines or whatever.
Okay. Almost trying to get a tag out of it.
Yeah.
So right, kind of do it like a yes and situation where you tell the joke and then you try to do a yes and off of it.
Totally.
That's awesome. And that's
post all my jokes in blogs. I used to post all my one-liners in blogs and get feedback that way too. So I have like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of just blog. Well, I need to go back and probably delete all of them because I'm sure there's a lot of really offensive stuff in there.
But, better go scrub that so you don't get canceled, right?
I'm probably next to be canceled and I'm going to be like, yeah, I know. That is so horrible.
I agree with you.
Yes, I'm just an awful person.
That's why I don't do that anymore.
I've grown. Now I write it in my diary. I keep all my thoughts in my diary where they should be.
Exactly. It's amazing what a journal can do.
Yeah, don't put everything online. But I would get feedback. People would say they like something, and I would do it on stage. And I need to go back through all my old blogs too, because I'm sure there's lots of stuff in there that I didn't know what to do with when I started out.
Yeah, that's one thing too. It's hard to when you're, until you with comedy, it's like when you film a special, then you can get rid of jokes. But until then, you're still building your act. And it's like you can write and write and write and have all this material and have material that's equally good and just not room for it.
Yeah. Too.
And then it's like, well, then how do you decide what you're going to put in and what you're not?
Oh, totally.
But definitely good to have that reserve.
I'm looking forward to going back to these clubs where I headline. Oh, and I also keep in my, I have a document on my phone where I write out a set list and I say the date I did that set list. So I kind of just have a rolling,
oh, okay.
This is the jokes I was telling these days. And it's a lot of the same. And I swap out a couple that way too. And at the clubs, I'll label my set list at the club so that when I go back, I know what I did at that club. And so, and I know headliners, when you come back, you can still do some old material because a lot of the audience is still new. But I'm excited for the next time going back to these clubs headlining to come with my new hour. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Is that something you've been trying to do then, is make sure you have a different whole hour, at least some different material, so when you go back to some of those clubs, it's not like having the same act? Because there's headliners that haven't changed their act in 20 years and people still go. And some of the same people will go see them year after year every time they come to town, but they don't change their act.
Yeah, that's so true. I remember starting out too, I'd see comedians, but I also saw a lot of them, do new stuff. And my plan is to kind of do a little bit of both, some of my one-liners and stuff, but writing just new bits based around stories. And I'm transitioning away from one-liners, but now it's dealing with being in the hospital and dying twice. So it's I have these areas of vulnerability to explore. So that was kind of cool. And I have a Zoom half hour. So I did my new half hour at Acme, which had to be all brand new material, which was so fun. So I have that half hour now. If I could headline and be told you can only tell new jokes, that would be amazing. Just if everyone comes in with the expectation that these are new jokes, that would just be that would be awesome. Cause then I can try new jokes.
That's definitely something to a good goal to try to achieve. I saw Dana Carvey did that when he was getting ready for his special, which I don't think was actually a sign, but he was doing new material. And part of the marketing was to say, hey, this is going to be new. It might not be good. They were very adamant about saying, hey, it's going to be fresh faces. My kids are opening up for me. And I'm doing new material. So this is what you're getting. And, so that way people didn't come in with them expectations of him doing old material or whatever. And if something didn't work, and be like, well, I told you, I'm working on it.
That's what's great about being famous too and having a following, is that it is easier to do new material. And it's just fun.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It'd be great to have your own fan base to be able to do that.
Fan base. There's three people.
It's like, yeah. As long as those three people come to every show and they're okay with everything, that's fine.
Yeah.
The traveling fan base. All right. Well, now we're going to switch it over. We're going to do some fun questions as we wrap up here. I started a playlist on Spotify, The Art of Bombing, Get Pumped. Is there a song that gets you pumped and ready to, like, just go?
I listen to Everybody Talks by the Neon Trees. Everybody talks. Which I just, that was my walk up music. Okay. And then also Taylor Swift has that song about, like, people not believing her in her, and then she's like, you're not gonna be able to figure it out. Look at me now, kind of like that. Oh, what's the name of it?
Well, I'm sure with the look at me now, I can probably.
That might not be a lyric, though, but that's kind of the vibe. Hey, you guys, you thought you didn't believe in me. You thought I was bad. Now I'm singing at the Grammys, which is not the line in the song, but when she sang at the Grammys, she said that in the Grammys. I was like, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's cool. She did that at the Grammys. Oh, nice. And what's been one of your favorite gigs that you've done so far?
In my whole life? Oh, my God. So, let's see. I did a set on Zoom a couple weeks ago. So good. Like, everyone was muted, so there was no laughter, so it was nice. So I could just laugh at myself. I like when I'm the only one laughing. I do laugh at myself on stage all the time.
And that's great.
Well, Chris, you laugh at yourself and it's like, well, yeah, I'm having a good time. Don't you laugh when you're laughing with your friends?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I guess I'd say I did a show in Aspen. When I was just starting out, I was in college and it was like my first theater show and I had to do like 5 minutes and I just felt so cool, like walking out on stage being this little person, this huge stage. I did it for it was for the Rooftop College Comedy Competition.
Oh, okay. Yep. I remember that.
That was just so fun. Like, I was so nervous and just had like a really fun set up in the mountains and then got super high off the oxygen. And, yeah. I don't know. I have so many fun shows. Like, I just love doing comedy. You put me in a basement, give me a microphone. I'll have a fun time.
That's great. Well, maybe one day I'll have to have you come do my basement because I set up a stage down there.
That's awesome.
I was actually working on having shows before the pandemic. So I was like slowly doing it. And then that happened, but I still put everything in. So
that's great.
Still got the space. All right. The last question that I like to, it's a game that I like to do called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be comedy related.
Okay. Let's do 6.
6. All right. Oh, this is great since you do a lot of one-liners. What's your favorite one-liner?
Oh, my gosh. Of mine or of someone else?
It can be either or. Your choice.
I mean, I'll just tell my dumbest one-liner, I guess. It's fun to... So dumb. This is just a one-liner that I don't know. Okay. The other day, I saw a Slinky in an elevator, and I was like, good for you. That's it. It's so dumb. But like...
I know, oh, my God.
It's not even a joke. Like, it shouldn't be. It's
no.
Not
but it is so good, like that visual of a Slinky just riding in an elevator. That's amazing.
I made posters of it and sold posters of that.
Like, oh, that's great.
It was a Slinky in the elevator and said, good for you. And I used to just work like this, like the picture of the elevator was so pixelated because I just stole it online and then enlarged it. And it just looked so dumb. But anyways, people, yeah, slinking an elevator. There you go.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. And then before we get out of here real quick, you also did a comedy journal that you sell. I actually bought one. And it's really cool. What inspired you to do? I haven't used it yet, but I've got
it. You gotta use it.
I'm planning on it. That's the reason I got it. I was waiting for the new year. I wanted to start fresh with the new year.
It's January already.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm behind. I gotta get in there, but I'm gonna use it. That's the way I got it.
Okay.
But what inspired you to do that? Because it's a really cool journal. For stand-up, it's really good.
So I wanted a journal for myself. This is how my brain works. I want something where every day I have a few prompts, I fill it out, and it gets my brain going. And so I looked into making it. So I went to graphic design school, so I knew how to lay it out. So I designed a book, and I was like, okay, great. Every day it asks you an inspiring phrase, or what's it called? Self-motivation word, whatever. You self-motivate.
Like
yeah. And then it's like, what are three things that are annoying you, or like what are three things you learned today, like what did you do today, and then like you tell a story from your childhood, whatever, and it gets your brain going. I have some check boxes and stuff. I wanted that for myself, and then I looked into printing it, and it was going to be like, you know, $20 or $30 or something like that to make this one book, maybe even more. And I was like, oh, I wonder how much it would cost to get like 10 or 20 or 30. And I was like, you know what, like I should just make these and then I could sell them, and if I order enough I could sell them for an affordable price. And so I just ordered like 200 of them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I posted online. I was like, hey, I made these journals. If anyone wants to buy them, I'll ship them out to you. $15 or whatever it was. I think it was $15 or something. And I sold out in 2 days. Like people.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, because I think there's so many people who want to write. They don't know where to start. Or they do write and they just don't have any structure. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's just nothing like it out there, like for stand-up comics. And I still think there's room for improvement. And I'm excited to like make new versions and like give people new prompts, because I didn't put that much work into it. I was like, I just want it for myself.
Yeah.
And ultimately too, I love encouraging comedians to write every day, because when I started, that's what people did for me. Like they were told like, keep writing. And I think that can be the hardest part sometimes when you don't have the structure set up to continue, right? Like when I was in college, it was easy to be motivated to do shows because I had all this free time and it was so fun. But like for a lot of people, it's work, because you have like a family or you have like a job, and mm-hmm. So it's work. So I wanted to make it be a little bit, have another motivating piece to get people to do the base of what a stand-up is. So I love helping comics. And I really don't make that much money selling them, considering all the time it takes to like mail them. It's really just about getting people this tool.
Yeah. Somebody, I'm in a writing group on Facebook, and somebody was talking about trying to get structure and just organized with writing. I was like, hey, here's a link to some stuff.
Yay! You know,
check this one out. And then there's somebody got me as a gift. It's called the Stand Up Comedy Notebook.
Nice.
And it's not like a journal, but it's like, you know, where you can put some premises in, and then like it has like questions where you can go. Like it's basically to help you write a joke is what it is.
Cool.
So it's not like a journal, but it's like structured to write jokes.
Sweet.
Kind of situation, which is kind of cool. I haven't used that one either, but that's because my writing style, I don't really physically write jokes. That's
gotcha.
I'm more of a mental, yeah. You know, I do it in my head, because then it also helps the memory muscle. Mm-hmm. And then I remember the jokes. But
I honestly think this is what I do when I write, is I sit down and I try to think of jokes and I write them out by hand. And what's so cool is that then you have them written out, which is great. So you should definitely do this, because then you have like a thing you can go back to. And I just free write for, you know, half hour, and I go back and I put stars by things that I think could be something else. And mm-hmm. I've gotten some of my best jokes from that, just from sitting down and writing.
Yeah. And I like that. That's one of the things about the journal that you made. There's a section in that for the daily, mm-hmm. just free write, which
free write.
I think free writing is really good. definitely, definitely helps. Cause yeah, you just sit down and write something. It doesn't matter what, you're just getting it out. Well, this has been so great. The last thing is, where can people find you? Where can they get the order the journal?
Oh yeah. So Andy Erickson is my handle down there. There's no C in Erickson. So I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and andyerickson.com. And my journal is thestandupcomedyjournal.com or thestandupcomedyjournal.com or standupcomedyjournal.com. And yeah, I just sell them out of my house. I try to send them out as quickly as I can. Sometimes it takes like a week.
But, mine was pretty quick. I was like, wow, I already got it. I was surprised.
Yeah. I have stamps.com, so I can just print off the label and just drop it in. But
yeah, that helps.
And then I also do, I haven't done it in a while, but I'm going to be doing it again, a monthly writer's group on Zoom where people can just join in and we workshop jokes. And
oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So reach out to me if you're interested in that group and I can get you the mailing list where I just send out a mailing list with the Zoom link and we do it. So we'll be starting that up probably in February.
Oh, cool. I personally might be interested in that.
Love to have
you. If days and times work out. Yeah, definitely. I'll get you my email.
Sunday afternoons. So.
Okay. Well, mostly free.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yay. This is so fun.
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.